Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast, Democratic National Convention Day 2. But as I stated yesterday, I wanted to go over some further data that we have come across from the U.S. Census Bureau in regards to a common theme that we have been discussing here for months, and that is obviously the concern in regards to the real estate market. And with the really real concern and grave concern of millions and millions of Americans facing eviction and foreclosure, kicked out of their homes, getting kicked out of their apartments, rental properties, what have you. A few months ago, we thought, some experts were projecting somewhere between 20 to 28 million Americans being evicted. Now there's further research and studies being put out there by the Aspen Institute, for one, which we were discussing earlier as well. Now that number is 30 to 40 million Americans. Even if it is a small fraction of that, it is devastating. It is a national crisis in and of itself. When you tack on to this, other studies and surveys done by the Census Bureau, some 30 million Americans are underfed. 30 million. Now, there's, no question that there is a lot of overlap between the Americans who are going to be evicted or likely going to face eviction and those who are also underfed. This is the United States of America. But at the same time, we have a NASDAQ hitting all-time highs. We have an S&P 500 hitting all-time highs with virtually no end in sight. And the real economic collapse, the real decline has not even begun. We ain't seen nothing yet, folks. We still have people in their homes. We still have people in their apartments. Wait till they get kicked out. And many of them will. Remember, great financial crisis over the period of a couple of years. 10 million Americans were evicted. 10 million. That's 25%. 25% of the potential high estimate of 40 million. And they project that that 40 million figure could be hit within months. Not over the course of a year or two, within months. That's how devastating this is. Yet, because of all of the funny money being printed, because we're a banana republic, and congratulations, by the way, national deficit, annual deficit, the actual, not the official BS that they give you, but the actual, $4,179 billion as of right now. I told you it was going to be over $4 trillion by the end of fiscal year 2020. We have the rest of August, and we have till the end of September. And that'll be a close of fiscal year 2020. And with the idiots back in town, because they could go on recess, Congress could go on recess, because they couldn't come to another agreement. They couldn't come up with a Nobody Cares Act Jr., to help the people, drop of a hat, they can help corporations. They can buy the corporate debt of the world's largest corporations. The world's, not just American, the world's largest corporations. But screw the little people. I told you, get out your piece of paper. Winners on one side, losers on the other. Very easy to identify them. They were going to go on vacation. They did. But then this mishap and all of these shenanigans with the post office, well, that was enough to get everybody back. And now, lo and behold, perhaps the Democrats are willing to sacrifice maybe up to 50% of their demands. Oh, good. 50% of their monstrosity of $3 trillion. All right, $1.5 trillion. Plus what the Republicans were willing to tolerate, $1 trillion. So what are they going to add them up? $2.5 trillion? Is it going to be $1 trillion? What are they going to come up with? We don't have the money, by the way. We're broke. But that didn't... Haven't even begun to see the true devastation. And there's already a lot to talk about, and we have been. But here you go. This is facing eviction. Again, Census Bureau. Renter households unable to pay rent and at risk of eviction as a share of total renter households. This survey was conducted from the week July 2nd to July 7th, which is an interesting time frame because the additional $600 a week was still in effect then. Okay? So again, renter households unable to pay rent and at risk of eviction as a share of total renter households, and this is broken down by state. I'm not going to go across all 50, but I do want to highlight a handful. Florida, 51%. Georgia, 46%. Alabama, 42%. Mississippi, 55%. Louisiana, 50%. Texas, 48%. Oklahoma, 42%. Arizona, 38%. New Mexico, 42%. Nevada, 43%. Wyoming, 44%. South Dakota, 42%. Iowa, 48%. Indiana, 44%. Illinois, 42%. Kentucky, 48%. Missouri, 48%. Tennessee, a whopping 58%. Only to be outdone by West Virginia at 59%. Ohio and Pennsylvania, 41% and 40% respectively. New Jersey, 44%. New York, 46%. The lowest state, Vermont, at 22%. Renter households unable to pay rent and at risk of eviction as a share of total renter households. Vermont is the lowest at 22%. This is a crisis waiting in the wings. And so many people are going to be evicted. How long do these moratoriums remain in place? That's a serious question. What are they going to come up with? Student loan payments being deferred. How much longer can they keep that off? We ain't seen nothing yet. So I just wanted to discuss this because this is a theme that we have been discussing for quite a while. We've been talking about it, well, really for over a year. Obviously didn't know that a pandemic was going to be the catalyst of the everything bubble, the surge of a pin. But you're still going to see the top-down, bottom-up squeeze. Yes, you are getting a little bit of a disconnect, which is also something that we predicted a very long time ago, that when the next economic crisis was before us, and it didn't make a difference what the cause was, folks, because the root cause is there's too much debt. I said there is going to be a disjoining. There is going to be a breakdown of quote-unquote traditional correlations. Things that usually that move in tandem are going to move opposite. Things that typically move opposite each other are now going to move in tandem. Well, typically when you see massive unemployment, you see housing really start to collapse. Well, because this pandemic is scaring people out of cities, you have this rush to the suburbs, to rural areas, bidding up the prices for these homes. You also have, because of this, demand for new home construction. How long is this going to last becomes the question. But you have all of that real estate that has been built up in major cities, not just across this country, but across the world, that has yet to fully be felt across the economic and financial system globally. That is still waiting in the wings. The massive wave of insolvencies that is waiting in the wings. The evictions that are waiting in the wings. And with it, the social unrest, the protests, and unfortunately, they will turn violent in some areas. You're going to get the violent riots. This is just beginning. And you're not going to hear any of this. Maybe very little if we're lucky. But very little from the three-ring circus that is going to be the Democratic National Convention and the Republican National Convention. These are both three-ringed circuses. I hope I did a good job last night trying to keep this audience focused on the fact that these are political machines. This is divide and conquer in your face. They want you to cry, they can make you cry. They want you to laugh, they'll make you laugh. They want you frustrated, they'll get you frustrated. They know how to do it. But none of these jokers at the top of the ticket and none of the idiots in Congress are going to solve these problems. They've created them. They are making them worse. You can at least say, well, in this three-ring circus, at least the Democrats are dressed like clowns because their policies are pretty laughable. They are unaffordable, unsustainable, but at least they're trying to pay for them. At least they're going to tell you, yeah, we're going to raise some taxes here. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. And they think that that's the proper rule of government. Republicans, on the other hand, they're dressed up like adults, but they're clowns too. So at least there's somewhat of a genuineness to the Democrats that lacks with the Republican Party. Because the Republican Party is just a bunch of lip service. Fiscally responsible, that's been out the window a long time ago. $4 trillion plus national deficit just for this year alone, this fiscal year alone, and we're not done? Give me a break. It's laughable. I don't know how anybody can take them seriously. They're just dressed up in suits, but they should be in clown suits too, because they're a joke. They're not standing up for this country. They're not standing up for the principles they claim to believe in. Not even close. So stay focused on the core issues that we talk about here every single day. Where's the outcry from the Democrats thus far in two full days of their Democratic National Convention of bailing out corporate America? Nowhere to be heard. Nowhere to be heard. What they are attempting to do, as we discussed yesterday with the continuation today, we'll see what happens tomorrow and Thursday. But what they are attempting to do, and I do think, again, putting on my political analyst hat, that it is a smart strategy to show, obviously, the contrast in personality and character between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, because there is a big difference. You may not like it, but it is what it is, so to speak. Because that seems to be the catchphrase now. It's what Donald Trump wants to say. He got burned on it by Michelle Obama. Bill Clinton had his little speech today, also hitting Donald Trump with the is what it is statement, because Donald Trump was interviewed recently, and in response to the number of deaths attributed to coronavirus, the president said, well, it is what it is. And we're going to get to some of that. But the Democrats, and I think smartly, at least thus far, they are not going after the Republican Party like you might typically see. Hammering them, the Republican Party. Now they're just hammering Donald Trump. You had John Kasich on there, the former Republican congressman and governor from Ohio, giving remarks yesterday. You had former Secretary of Defense and Senator Chuck Hagel making comments today. You had a video with the late Senator John McCain, sort of highlighting the friendship between McCain and Biden. You have former Secretary of State Colin Powell advocating and endorsing Joe Biden. Now, of course, you can say, well, Colin Powell has been off the train for a long time. Chuck Hagel was in the Obama administration as well. You can say these guys don't really care. They've left the Republican Party. You can make that argument. I think some of them would say differently, but okay, you can think what you want. But understand the underlying strategy here by the Democrats. They are saying, look, Republicans, you can come to this party. We can work together. I'm not saying I agree with this, folks. I'm not saying they're jokers at the end of the day. I am just giving my analysis of what is going on here as to how the masses of people are likely going to respond to this, or how they are trying to get the masses of people to respond to this campaign and to this strategy from the DNC. They want Republicans to understand it's okay to vote for a Democrat. It's okay to vote for Joe Biden because Joe Biden is endorsed by Republicans. Joe Biden has worked with Republicans. We don't despise the Republican Party. We just really don't like Donald Trump. He's not the guy for this job. He's in over his head. He can't rise to the occasion. But you can come to our party. You can vote for Joe Biden. You can do that. And we can unite this country once again. Now, if you want to buy into that, be my guest. But Joe Biden has been there for 40 years. A lot of the divisiveness that exists today was in existence during the Obama term as well. Not to this degree, it is getting worse. It has continuously gotten worse year by year. Now, legitimate argument is this is not Donald Trump's fault, but he ain't making it better. Not even close. And I think that argument will resonate with a lot of people who say, okay, I gave Donald Trump a chance. He is not rising to the occasion for this very reason. Everybody knows that the country is divided. And everybody knows that the president fans the flames. So that could be the tipping point. Again, this is more, in my opinion, at least at this juncture, a referendum on Donald Trump. Do you want him for another 4 years or do you not? Now, over the next couple of days, maybe this convention will sway people to think, you know what, I really didn't take a hard look at Joe Biden, but he actually might be the guy for this job. He might be the guy who can do it. I'm not saying that I believe this, because I don't think that Joe Biden is the man for the hour either. But does he have more empathy than the president? Yeah, I think he does. Yes, I think he does. Would it possibly be easier for Joe Biden to reach across the aisle to get things done with the Republicans? At this juncture, possibly. Be quite honest with you, possibly. But it's going to be nasty either way. Whoever wins, the protests are going to continue. The riots will continue. This is not going to get better. It's going to get worse, much worse, before it gets better. Because there is no leadership. It is divided. People know what's coming. People know if they're about to be evicted or not. People know if they're paying their bills or not. People know if they are working out agreements with their utility companies, with their banks, with their landlords. They know if they are working with each other or if it's go time. You're out the door once these moratoriums are lifted. People know what's coming. People know if they're underfed or not. You in a food bank line or aren't you? Your costs going up or are they going down? People know. These things, these issues are not going to be addressed. Not in great detail. This is just the continuation of the three-ring circus. This is the divide and conquer. This is their strategy. The Democrats, at least at this juncture. Next week, we'll see what the Republicans put together. But I think if the Democrats can remain on this script, it can prove successful, but we still got a long couple of months to go. So this evening, again, we had former Secretary of State John Kerry and former President Clinton, probably gave the sharpest critique and direct attack of President Trump. The McCain video with Joe Biden was, I think, a little bit more of, okay, trying to bring people together. Joe Biden can reach across the aisle. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell, he went, of course, after the president as well, but I think he was trying to really show more the characteristics of a strong and consistent and reliable leader. And, of course, he was making the case that that is not Donald Trump. But his critique, I don't think, was as sharp-tongued as was Kerry's and Clinton's. And then lastly, the keynote speaker for day two was Jill Biden, the wife of Joe Biden, and she gave her speech from a classroom because she is a teacher. And I thought it was a good backdrop. Another decent, effective communicator. I don't think she did as well as Michelle Obama did the night before, but nonetheless, I think her message came through. I think the video that the DNC put together, sort of the lead up to Joe Biden's speech, was very effective. I think it showed the Biden family as an everybody family. And again, this is what they were trying to do. They can put together the image that they want you to see. All right? So again, keeping my political analysis hat on here, analyst hat on, this is what we saw. This is what we heard. This is what they want you to see. This is what they want you to hear. This is what they want you to feel. And that's most important. That's what they want you to feel. Joe Biden, that family, the Biden family could be my next door neighbors. Now, how many people could necessarily say that about the Trump family being in the penthouse on Fifth Avenue? That's a difference. That's a big difference. Will the RNC be able to get that type of feeling for the Trump family? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe they're not going after it. Maybe Trump's like, I'm a capitalist, baby. That's what I did. I made big money. I live in the penthouse on Fifth Avenue. That's what I want. You want to work hard, you can get there too. So, I mean, it's all in how you want to make the argument. What do you want people to see? What do you want them to hear? How do you want them to feel? The argument's going to be the same on the RNC side from the standpoint, okay, Joe Biden was status quo. Didn't know what he was doing then, not going to know what he's doing now. Will that hold? Well, we're going to find out in a couple months. Now, tomorrow we're going to have President Obama give remarks, and I also believe Kamala Harris are scheduled to give remarks. Now, for that sector of the country who is concerned with Joe Biden's age, that he might not be able to fulfill at least his first term, that would put Kamala Harris in the big seat. Is she ready for it? Well, clearly the Democrats didn't think that she was, at least not to be at the top of the ticket, but she made her way to number two, to the number two spot. She is going to have to put on a good performance over the next couple of months. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. She is going to have to state her case as to what the vision for this country is from the Biden-Harris ticket. She is going to have to prosecute the Trump administration very forcefully and very articulately, which she did not do well during the debates, during her campaign to become the presidential nominee. She did not. Now, if they can hone in her on her message, keep her to script, as I stated last week, then she might prove effective. She might allay some of those fears of Americans out there that think, okay, well, I really don't know this woman. Is she going to be able to do it if she has to? Which is a legitimate question, like it is for anybody. How will she perform in her debate against Pence? Pence is going to be able to stand his ground. I have no doubt about that. Question will be, how well will Kamala do? If she can hold her ground as well, then again, that might allay some of those fears. But again, I think the biggest factor in all of this is Donald J. Trump. In my mind, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Don't mean to sound like a broken record, but this is what it is. You either want him for another 4 years or you don't. Of course, you can vote for somebody else. But, I mean, that just doesn't seem to be an option for anybody. I don't know why, but this is just not what we do in this country. So we're going to continue to watch this train wreck. We're going to continue to watch the three-ring circus of the DNC and the RNC, and then we're going to go in the voting booth, get your sticker, and vote for one of these jokers and expect something different to happen. I, for the life of me, cannot understand it. But that's what you're going to do. That's what most people are going to do. And we're going to be back here another 4 years. National debt's going to be over $30 trillion. Deficits are still going to be multi-trillion per year. Unfunded liabilities will be through the roof. God only knows where the stock market will be. God only knows how many people will be evicted, starving, protests, riots, civil wars. I mean, they're all continuing, by the way. Everything is heating up. You'll be scratching your head. I can't figure it out. And I'll be here 4 years from now saying I told you so and not being happy about it at all. And it'll be the same thing. I mean, the great thing, these are on my website. These are on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, LinkedIn. There's a record. So in 4 years, when you know what hits the fan, and it's even worse than now, and we got these one of these jokers in there, plus all the idiots in Congress, the same ones, because nobody's going to really get replaced. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. We can go back to the tape. We can go back to the podcast. And it's going to sound like a broken record. Yep. That's what we were talking about here at the Capitol News 4 years ago. You're going to vote for these jokers. Things are going to get worse. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I'm going to be. You don't have to vote for these jokers. You can vote for a third-party candidate. You cannot vote. You can do it. Regardless of what Michelle Obama suggested yesterday, basically saying, don't vote third party. Don't have a protest vote. No, I want a protest vote. Don't tell me I got to pick between these two jokers that's been screwing this country over for generations. Don't give me that. I want somebody else. What else do we have here to wrap this up? So we know what's going to happen tomorrow, those speeches. Oh, yes, tomorrow. I may not be on tomorrow, but I will be back Thursday. So if you miss a podcast tomorrow, that's why. I'm just giving you a heads up now. Should have said that at the top of the podcast, but is what it is. If you miss me tomorrow, I'll be back on Thursday. Some other market performance, and that's how we'll round out today's podcast. Japan exports tumble again. Japan's exports fell 19.2% from a year earlier to Japanese yen of 5.37 trillion in July, compared with market consensus of a 21% drop after a 26.2% fall in the previous month. It was the fifth straight month of double-digit declines as the coronavirus pandemic took a heavy toll on global demand. Nonetheless, we have the cash trade in Japan trading up 0.3%. The U.S. dollar continues to get a licking. The dollar index is at 92.31. It hasn't been this low in a couple years' time. If this trend doesn't stop, hold, reverse, I mean, This is the effect of inflation, folks. This is the further destruction of the dollar. Are we surprised? No, we're not. Is it still possible that we get that dollar doom loop scenario? Of course it is. Of course it is. Is there the possibility that it just simply continues its decline from here? That's also a possibility. When you have all of these central banks, all of these governments printing their currencies like they're going out of style because they are, anything's possible. The distortionary effects, the malinvestments that are continuing, the destruction of wealth, the destruction of savings, the increased cost of living, the lower standard of living, it's already here. We don't have to wait. It's already here. It's just going to get worse, unfortunately, because of the Nobody Cares Act and because of so many other policies and programs that are making their way through the system and that are likely coming down the pike. From a fiscal standpoint, from a monetary standpoint, this all is just getting started. You get 40 million people kicked out of their homes. What do you think Congress is going to do? What do you think the central banks are going to do to try to kick this can even further down the road? It's all it is, trying to delay the inevitable. They know what's coming. There's just no leadership. There's just no honesty. That's why this country is divided. That's why this country is in decline. Because the people know the truth. They can feel it. They might not be able to root cause everything, but they know something's amiss. Big time. And they're frustrated, and they're sick and tired of being sick and tired. As they should be. Democratic National Convention, day two. Again, tomorrow, the keynote speakers will be President Barack Obama and VP candidate Senator Kamala Harris. I will most likely be off, but I will conduct my analysis on Thursday. And of course, Thursday, we will get initial jobless claims, continuing claims, the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, which we will also be discussing on Thursday. So enjoy your day, and I'll catch you back next time. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.